right, joining me now, he's the voice of Sunday Night Football, owner of PFF, host of the Chris Collinsworth podcast. It is the one and only, the great Chris Collinsworth. Great. Chris, it's great to have you on. I mean, I've been waiting a while for this, and I'm really looking forward to this. I mean, I think right now, this is, we're a few days away from the one-year anniversary of when I joined your show and officially joined PFF, so it's a bit ideal to have this happen right now.
Great to have you working with PFF. It has been quite the year, and people don't know yet, but we have a lot of surprises in store for this upcoming season, and I think it's going to be really exciting. It'll start all with fantasy football that we do, and then we'll have some gambling surprises as well. And of course, you're out there breaking news all the time. So we're really, really excited about 2022.
It's been a great year so far with the company. Looking forward to what's to come. And as George Hurry would say, we are going to the moon here at PFF. So I'm looking forward to a lot of great things here at PFF. What I want to do here, I want to bounce around some teams and quarterbacks and talk about some other things as well. But let me start with the hometown team, the Cincinnati Bengals, because last year was so magical. They addressed the offensive line this offseason, which is huge. But I think I could make an argument, Chris, that the Bengals are still the least talked about team in the AFC North right now, right? We all know what's happening in Cleveland. Baltimore has the Lamar contract situation. Pittsburgh has a first-round rookie quarterback, and they made a ton of additions this offseason. Do you think people are still sleeping on this Bengals team that only got better this year? They just made the Super Bowl, and it feels like nobody's talking about them.
To me, let's stay in the fantasy football world here first. If you're going to find a younger, more exciting collection of skill position players, I'd like to know who they are. You go right down the list. I mean, between Joe Burrow and what he did despite 70 sacks on him total, if you count the playoffs last year, Joe Mixon with 1,200 yards and 13 touchdowns was unbelievable. Ja'Marr Chase is, I mean, I said it already. I watched him play the game against Baltimore last year in Baltimore where he caught that pass and spun out and ran 70 yards for a touchdown. And he played all of like six or seven games in the NFL. And I said, he's the best wide receiver the Bengals have ever had. And people are like, what? And I go, I'm telling you, what he can do is just phenomenal. He can catch the ball. He has deep speed. He has great run after the catch capability. And then T. Higgins really could have easily been the MVP of the Super Bowl with what he did there. And Tyler Boyd is a good player. And then they improved that offensive line. Lyle Collins, if he stays healthy, is going to give them something they haven't had for a long time. Ted Karras is a very consistent kind of guy. Alex Kappa coming over from Tampa is a heck of a player. And Jonah Williams is you know, a top draft pick. So this is a football team that, because of what they have to pay, that collection of skill position players, the fact that they got, I'm going to call it lucky, but it's really not. It's give them credit. Trey Hendrickson, who came over from the Saints, comes up with 14 sacks on the year, and Sam Hubbard's not bad on the other side. I just don't know where you go, I don't believe in the Bengals because of this. What is the this if you're saying you don't believe in them?
Ryan, you know, I did a podcast with Brad Spielberger here, and we kind of ranked the top GMs in the NFL. We put Duke Tobin in the top half, and I feel like a lot of people don't even know who he is because he doesn't officially have the GM title there. But the moves that he's made over the last several years, obviously getting Burrow was the easy part, but drafting Chase over an offensive tackle, or letting Carl Lawson go and getting Hendrickson, like you mentioned, we're letting William Jackson go and getting Awuzie and Mike Hilton instead. Just so many great moves for that team. You mentioned Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. I think Higgins' year last year was a bit overshadowed because of how great Chase was. But going back to Ja'Marr, like, what do you feel like his ceiling is? Because you mentioned he is like the greatest receiver in your mind for this Bengals franchise history. They've had you and Chad Johnson and AJ Green and Isaac Curtis, like so many legends there. What do you think is his ceiling after what he did in his rookie year?
Well, I think you have to remember a couple of things that he didn't play the year before, right? I mean, no. He sat out. So he was a year away from football. You've got Joe Burrow was coming back from a major ACL. They didn't work out together at all, basically, in the offseason. What could they do? Burrow, for the first half of the season, I think, despite the fact that he was playing really well, was growing back after the injury. The offensive line wasn't good last season for the Bengals at all. I mean, they almost won the Super Bowl, and there were positions on the field that just weren't NFL level play. So when you take all of that and you look at what Jamar could be, I just think that he's going to be confident and ready. Burrow's going to be better because of the better protection. Higgins is now solidified himself as a legitimate threat. And really not enough people talk about Mixon. And not enough people talk about what this team did in the playoffs last year. I mean, you think about what they did going in and knocking off Tennessee in their place, the number one seed. They come back and they knock off Kansas City for the second time in a month or whatever that was. And their defense made the plays at the end of the game where every other time, you know, Mahomes drives his team down the field and they score the winning touchdown like they did against the Buffalo Bills. But they didn't. And that defense got it done. And the defense came very close. You could make an argument that but for a tight pass interference call late in the game that would have made it fourth down and eight for the Rams, the Bengals very easily could have been world champions last year with a lot more flaws than what this team has.
Yeah, just to understand the flaws, like their starting center last year started every game besides for two games is still a free agent, just to show you like how weak that position was last year. That entire offensive line, nobody's picking him up. It just shows what they had up front and compared to what they're going to have this year of all the additions. You mentioned Lael Collins, Karras, and Kappa up front. It will make a major difference there. Joe Burrow deserves a lot of credit. So does Zach Taylor, who at this point last year, in some people's eyes, was on the hot seat going into the year. Now he has an extension and is there for years to come with Joe Burrow. I want to talk about some of these intriguing quarterback head coach combos, right? We just talked about Burrow and Taylor because there are some really fascinating ones going into this year. And let me start off this one. The last time Doug Peterson coached an NFL game was week 17 on Sunday Night Football. And they basically lost on purpose, right? I'm sure you remember that very well.
Yep.
So he's back. He's now in Jacksonville with Trevor Lawrence. The last year of Urban Meyer was a disaster in every way. What are you expecting from Trevor Lawrence, a guy who is deemed a generational quarterback, teaming up now with Doug Peterson going into this year?
Yeah, I think that you have to expect a jump because typically we see a jump regardless in second years with the quarterbacks. I mean, just think about what these quarterbacks go through their rookie year, especially the high draft picks. So they have to go to all these workouts. They have to get ready for the combine. They're under pressure constantly to perform. They're in front of the media nonstop. They're getting picked apart by every critic, by every PFF, by every group out there. And by the time they're drafted in whatever it is, the end of April, they've got to be exhausted. Right? I mean, you've got to be. You go through that entire process, and now you every other quarterback is playing golf during January and February and March, and then they're starting to work out, and they're going to be ready, where these guys are like, their brains have to be fried. I think it's a horrible system. I just have to tell you, I think that the draft system that's in place right now is horrible. They should move the draft sometime earlier, give these kids somewhat of a chance to recover after the process of playing in a season and training for these combines and all the workouts. I also don't think that there should even be workouts allowed. If you go to the combine, that's it. That's all you get of my client. And a lot of agents are like that. And I would be like that too. I'd like, no, not pulling a hamstring. He's not popping his Achilles like that poor kid from Michigan did doing some crazy workout. So I think on its face that Lawrence is going to be better. Now let me talk about Doug just a little bit. Doug is one of the coolest guys in the world. He's just a laid back, comfortable kind of guy, much like what Trevor had at Clemson. That just somebody that he's going to be very relatable. I think it's kind of a match made in heaven, to be honest with you. It's a great choice. And Trevor is, he's a tough kid. I watched the game. The only time I saw him in person last year was in Cincinnati on a Thursday night. He runs hard. And he has a real element of that. He's going to have ETN come back and sort of as his, you know, safety valve kind of guy who didn't play at all last year. Do I think that they're going to go and win the division? Probably not. But I would expect a major jump from him.
And if I'm not mistaken, the Jaguars open up the preseason in under a month on the Hall of Fame game on August 4th against the Raiders. You're calling that game, right?
Yep.
Yep, so you'll get to see them fairly early the first game here.
I'm not sure we'll get to see Trevor Lawrence, but I will see Doug Peterson.
You will see Doug Peterson, exactly. We probably won't see any starters in that game, but football is in under a month. The next one I want to talk about is Doug's former team, and that's the Eagles. Now with Nick Sirianni, with Jalen Hurts, they make the playoffs last year in a year nobody expected to see from them. And it's a big year for him in particular because since he was a second-round pick, at this time next year, he'll be entering the final year of his contract, which is when you obviously have negotiations for that second big deal. What are you expecting out of Jalen Hurts? Because everyone is already talking about, oh, they have two first-round picks next year. It's a good quarterback class. But here we are, we're entering this year. They have A.J. Brown now. What are you expecting out of him?
Well, let's start with A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown comes over from an offense that was – based around Derrick Henry until he got hurt, and then play action off of it. So he got a lot of one-on-one coverages. So a lot of those slants and all that stuff off of play action, RPO, was tailor-made for him, right? Because he's a catch-and-run guy. He's powerful. You can't bring him down. He's coming to the exact same offense. I mean, he really is. You've got Jalen Hurts, who's, you know, when they made the move, what I think it was 6 weeks into the season last year, and they became a run-focused team.
Yes.
They took off, and that's how they made the playoffs. They won 7 of their last 10 games. He had 56 rushing touchdowns. I mean, rushing first downs last year. He had 10 rushing touchdowns, which is the sixth most. He only threw 16 touchdown passes. So you go, all right, is he going to be able to take a step up here with A.J.? Can we get him the 25 touchdown passes? Can we keep him healthy in a system where he's going to be expected to run the football as much as he is? But you also have to remember that he was the leading rusher on this team. I mean, you talk about Miles Sanders. How great would it be to be Miles Sanders in this offense? He averaged 5.5 yards per carry, and he wasn't even the leading rusher on the team. The quarterback was. So there's a lot of things to really like. What they didn't do well last year was play defense, at least in the back end. Brandon Graham got hurt, so their pass rush was hurt. I love their draft. I think Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean, some of those guys are going to be back in there along with Brandon Graham. There's a lot to like about this. But A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, that's pretty damn good right there if that defense does take a jump.
Yep, and I think Howie Roseman realized this offseason the defense was a priority, and they went after Hassan Reddick in free agency. They signed James Bradbury after the draft. You mentioned their draft picks with Jordan Davis, with N'Kobe Dean, who they believe is healthy and will play right away this season, which is massive considering where they got him in the third round. And then, of course, they get Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown. And as I mentioned before, it is such a pivotal year for him because he could be entering a similar situation as Dak Prescott was. Fourth round pick. After his second year, it was time to negotiate with Jerry Jones. They couldn't get a deal. Finished out his rookie year, got a franchise tag, and eventually he got a tremendous deal out of Dallas because he forced the situation. Jalen could be in that type of a scenario as well in Philadelphia if he has a big year going into next year, will Howie pay him? Will Howie not pay him? Will he let him play out his rookie contract? Those type of situations could possibly come up there in Philadelphia if he has a big year or just a decent enough year there with the Eagles.
Here would be my fear. Yeah. And let me play devil's advocate here a little bit.
Let's hear. Yes.
So we all watched the playoff game against Tampa, right? And eventually, those are the quarterbacks you have to beat. You know, you've got to beat Tom Brady. You've got to beat Aaron Rodgers. You got to beat those guys in order to win it. And will he ever be in position to be in a 35-36 shootout kind of game and outgun Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert or Josh Allen? You know, that so if that's your path, it makes sense, right? But if it's your path, eventually you're going to get in one of those shootout games, and can you win that? You know, some of these other guys have proven that they can.
So I agree with you, and I thought maybe they would think about this offseason, like Russell Wilson was available. Jeff Lurie has already on the record that he loves Russell Wilson. He wished they took him back in that draft. They couldn't get him because Seattle took him. I thought they would maybe make a push for him this offseason. They never were serious in those talks. So they're all in on Jalen for this year at the very least. But again, they have two first-round picks next year. But if he has a big year, how do you say no to him? And that's where it becomes complicated because there is no fifth-year option. He's entering the final year of his deal by that time, and you have to make a decision or else the leverage starts going to his side. And knowing how Howie is a very savvy negotiator, he comes from the business side of things, I wonder what will happen if they get into that situation.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a big bet, and I think the Philadelphia Eagles' eyes are wide open. It's going to be a better draft class for quarterbacks this time around. They've got additional picks because of the trade they made with the Saints. I think they're ready to go either way. If Jalen works out, fantastic. If he doesn't, okay, they're in position to make a move.
You know what? There's another team that's in a bit of a similar situation. It's my last one here when it comes to these intriguing quarterback head coach combos. It's in the NFC East once again, and it's Daniel Jones. Entering the final year of his deal because they declined his fifth-year option. I think this is the best situation he's had when it comes to the coaching, the offensive line, the skill guys. Brian Daboll and Daniel Jones, are you a believer this could work and he could be a long-term answer there, or we'll come in next year and find the new one?
Daniel Jones was not a high pick for me. I thought they severely overdrafted him. When they drafted him, it's no reflection on the kid. You know, the team just thought higher of him than I did. I think he's playing just about the way I thought he would play. You know, to be perfectly honest with you, he's had flashes. You know, he's had good moments, and he's can run at least 70 yards, as we now know. You know, but for the first time, we're going to see him with a good offensive line in front of them. We're maybe going to see, you know, Andrew Thomas and Evan Neal, two of the top picks in the draft the last few years, playing tackle for him now. Saquon Barkley coming back. Saquon has to be out of his mind, right? I mean, he comes in, he's brilliant. He's going to the Hall of Fame. We all love him. And he just can't stay healthy after that. And Thibodeau on the defensive side is going to add something on that side of the ball as well. But it really comes down to, can Brian Daboll do what he did with Josh Allen? You have to say what Daboll did, and Sean McDermott is more of a defensive-minded coach, so you got to give most of the credit here to Daboll, I think, that if – I mean, nobody developed faster than Josh Allen did. I mean, it was meteoric what we saw out of Josh Allen. When he came out of college, he didn't have this sort of accuracy numbers. He didn't put it up his first year. It wasn't, you know, you didn't really see all that sort of stuff. And then it was just like, boom, 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 just better and better and better. And arguably the best quarterback in all of football right now. The guy can run. He's powerful. He can throw it anywhere. He has a charismatic personality. He's like Jim Kelly in Buffalo. He's beloved. He's engaged in the city. He's involved in the local hospital where they took care of his grandma or whatever the story was. I mean, this is the perfect storm for the Buffalo Bills, and they've got him signed now to a long-term deal. Can Daniel Jones be that? I don't think he has the physical tools of a Josh Allen. And what we've seen lately is that the toolsy quarterbacks, the Justin Herberts, the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes, even though they may not have done it at the college level, at the kind of precision that we've seen out of them in the NFL. But is that Daniel Jones? I'm going to guess not. And I'm thinking the Giants guess that as well because they didn't pick up the deal. But it doesn't mean it can't happen. And it does it. So if Brian Daboll does it again, oh my gosh, what do you pay him as a head coach? I mean, if you can take a quarterback and make it work, and it may work because Daniel Jones is going to be protected better than he's been. Daniel Jones is going to have an offensive line that was bad a season ago that's going to be better. There's no way his two top receivers are going to not score a touchdown this year, right? I mean, right. Kenny Galladay, Kadarius Toney, they didn't score a touchdown last year. They both had injuries. So we'll see. And every year, a team like the Cincinnati Bengals come along and shocks us all, right? So could it be the Giants? Of course it could be the Giants. Could it be Daniel Jones? Of course it could, and he does have a quarterback maker in Brian Daboll, who, much like Doug Peterson, is just a good dude. I mean, he's been an assistant forever. He's been dealing with coaches and quarterbacks forever. He was a great hire by the New York Giants. Now the question is, it's not Daboll, it's Daniel Jones.
I think that's the argument that everybody has who's still a believer in Daniel Jones. There are people who believe there's untapped potential there. It's just situation-wise. Coaching, he's had every year somebody else, right? It was Shurmur and Shula. Then it was Judge and Garrett. Then it was Judge, Garrett, and Freddie Kitchens. His offensive line has been terrible. The skill positions are always injured. Saquon, Galladay, Toney, Shepard, Ingram, they're never on the field at the same time. Could this be the year where he has good coaching? Mike Kafka is his offensive coordinator. A lot of people believe he's a future head coach in this league. You have all those people coming together. Could this be the year where it just all comes together? Saquon needs to have a big year for his own sake, so that's going to help him out as well. And again, if he does have a good enough year, he's heading into a situation where he's either going to be a free agent or he gets franchise tagged and they start working on an extension. And by then, just like Jalen Hurts, leverage goes to his side whenever you get franchise tagged. So that's why it's such a fascinating situation. He has the right minds around him. If everyone can stay healthy, he has a pretty good team around him for the first time. It's all really dependent on how it all unfolds. But just based off that, I'm fascinated to see how he does this year with the Giants. Speaking of this Giants team, they are a team that won't be on Sunday Night Football this year. Yeah. But I was looking around on the Sunday Night Football schedule, and there are some amazing games on here. But before I even get to that, I'm curious to ask you about this, because this is the first year where you're going into it without Al Michaels. It's been over a decade. Yeah. You're going in with Mike Tirico, who is terrific as well. But how weird is that for you, where it's not going to be Al next to you for the first time in forever?
A little weird, but you know, somebody went back and looked it up. I didn't realize this, but I guess Mike and I have called like 20 games together at some point. I'm like, really? I had no idea. And Mike and I are good friends. So we've had a great relationship for the entire time that he's been working at NBC. All that being said, Al Michaels is iconic, right? He is. He's the voice of most of the great moments in sports. You know, you go back to the Miracle on Ice in 1980 before all you guys were born, which was one of the greatest calls in the history of calling anything. He did Monday Night Football, Monday Night Baseball, which doesn't, if you're young, you wouldn't know what that was. Monday Night Baseball and Monday Night Football were the two biggest things if you were a kid, because they weren't a baseball game. There weren't 20 baseball games on every night. There wasn't, you know, any time a football game stood alone. There wasn't even Sunday Night Football at that time. And it was a big deal. Everybody watched that. And they were sort of the voice of the entire league. So if you didn't watch anything all week in Major League Baseball, you could watch Monday Night Baseball and you got caught up. Same thing with Monday Night Football. They'd have the President of the United States on. They'd have, you know, it was big. When Monday Night Football came to town, there were parties and parades, and they did a big appearance on in Times Square or whatever. You know, those guys were rock stars when they came to your town. So he had all of that going. He's done the Olympics. He is a guy that has just some of those calls. He's done whatever it was now, 11 Super Bowls or something, that you'll remember forever. You'll just remember forever. The one that I will point out is that when Malcolm Butler made the interception at the end to win the game for the New England Patriots. So I don't know where Al was watching it, but I'm watching the field because I want to see the whole picture. I'm not watching the monitor. I'm watching the field. And I mean, that ball, that collision happened in the end zone. I didn't know what happened. I had absolutely no idea who had the ball. Did anybody catch it? Was it pass interference? Was it? And I mean, when the collision happened, you go back and listen to the call of that thing. Al Michaels goes, Malcolm Butler with the intercept. I'm like, how the hell did you know Malcolm Butler, who was not even a starting player really going into that game, came up with that interception? And I'll just always remember it because he was so good on that particular play that I came back. And it gave me a chance to just sit and think for about 30 or 40 seconds. I'll never forget it, that Al was just, and it was mayhem, and, you know, they gave away the Super Bowl, and, you know, Marshawn Lynch took it from the 5 to the 1. How do you, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm just thinking, and I go, those are the moments where you go, this is why we get paid, right? It's my job to go into my gut and say what I'm thinking at this moment right now. And I could redraw the play. I can show the pick. I can show that. And all I could come up with was, I can't believe that call.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's all I go. Al did all the heavy lifting on that play. And it gave me a chance to just and his ability to do that, and I think, you know, just saying what every fan in Seattle was thinking at the same time, ended up being one of those moments that I think between the two of us, we always go, there were a million ways to screw that up. I'm just glad that you called the right guy. You were all over it. Fred Gadelli, Drew Esikoff with the shots of the thing. That's probably the moment that I'll remember the most. But the thing I'll remember the most is that we probably had worked together for 3 or 4 years, and I'm just a grinder. When I get to the host city, I just sit in my room and I would work and just put it all together and make it da da da. And he finally came up to me and he said, "You have to stop it. Stop it. What are you know, Al, I can hear his voice. Stop it. Stop it. What are you doing?" And I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "This is a relationship business." He goes, "We're invited into the homes of people, more homes than any primetime show for the last 11 years. It's a world record in television, right? No television show had ever been the number one show for 11 years. No sports programming had ever been the number one show, period. American Idol was 6 straight years. We've been 11 straight years."
Yes.
So when you put together a streak like that, there's a lot of reasons why, mostly the National Football League, but we had an unbelievable group of people together. I mean, Fred Gadelli, Drew Esikoff, producer, director, the support of NBC, Al Michaels, Michelle Tafoya, everybody. It was a fantastic run, but it's over. You know, it's done. Al's going to do Amazon with Kirk Herbstreit. They'll be fantastic. Mike Tirico is going back to what he loves most, which is calling games, and he'll be fantastic. But it'll be different, right? It'll be somewhat different. But I'm excited about it. I really like Mike. I really like Rob Hyland, who's our new producer. Drew Esikoff stays on. And hopefully we can keep the streak alive. You know, that's what we're doing. But a tip of the cap to Al Michaels, Fred Gaudelli, who won't be with us this year. They are a huge part of why that was so successful. And now they're going to be great with Amazon too.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just wonderful. I mean, like, again, Al, you and Al are just one of the greatest duos, especially for all of like the guys who are growing up now. Like, we grew up on Al and Chris on Sunday Night Football, and that's what it always was. And now it's going to be you and Mike. And just going back to Al for a second, you are in the booth with him for 4 Super Bowls, right? You had one with Fox, 4 with NBC. Correct. With Al. Bill Belichick has been in 4 of them. The only one he wasn't was last year.
He was in all of them except the last one. Yeah, I was like, well, okay, Bill, we had the Super Bowl about midway through the season. We had their game against Tampa, and when we left the meeting, I said, I'll see you in the Super Bowl. He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, dude, every time we do the Super Bowl, you're in it, so don't worry about it.
Exactly. So I'm just looking at the Sunday Night Football schedule. I guess I'll just end with this. Bill only comes up once this year in week 15 versus the Raiders. I guess just how weird is that to only have Bill once? It's like first time in forever where it's only one time. And then secondly, I guess more on a serious note, Bill not hiring an offensive coordinator, going with potentially Joe Judge and Matt Patricia. What are your thoughts on that? I'm really curious.
I think that people underestimate Bill Belichick as an offensive coordinator. Everybody's going to think about him with the Giants and what he did and then carried over and won all the Super Bowls here. He knows everything. I mean, he and Tom Brady every week dissected the opposing defense in a way that maybe in the history of the league has never been done. I mean, let's face it, those are two of the brilliant minds that have ever participated in our game. And so after a while, what's it about? Is it about putting together an offensive scheme? They ain't changing their scheme. You know, they may bring in a few new things with those two guys coming back in here, but they're not changing Josh McDaniel's scheme. So they know what works. Now it comes down to deciphering what the defense is going to do. And they're going to put together their plan during the course of the week. And sometimes who calls the plays isn't that significant anymore, because it really comes down to what happens on the field. The greatness of Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and so many of these guys, Russell Wilson, is they can get to the line of scrimmage. If you're the greatest offensive coordinator in the world, right? The greatest that ever lived, your odds of predicting what the defense is going to be and then matching the proper play against the defense that is ultimately run is 20%, 15%. I have no idea, you know, it's pretty random though. So the great ones at the quarterback position, they get the last look, right? They get the last look, clock's running down, the defense, hut, hut. Now they start to move, they start to show their disguise, they're starting to show what they're actually going to play. Blue, blue, blue. And here we go. Now we're going to the play that's perfect against that defense. So if Mac Jones is one of those guys that can do that, they're going to be in great shape. If Mac Jones isn't one of those guys that can do that, I don't give a damn who's calling the play. The call has to be at the line of scrimmage. The last check has to be at the line of scrimmage, or it's going to have issues anyway.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's definitely one of the big storylines that I'm keeping an eye on to see how it all unfolds. Mac Jones' second year, who's going to be in his ear. Will it be Bill? Will it be Matt? Will it be Joe? Will it be somebody else? Whatever it is, as you said, it kind of all does come down to Mac Jones at the end of the day. Sunday Night Football officially gets underway September 11th with the Bucs and Cowboys. Some great games on the schedule this year. Chiefs, Bucs, Packers, Bills, Bengals, Ravens, Chargers, Rams. Fantastic games all over the slate. Chris, this was awesome. I could talk with you for hours about all of this stuff. Everyone can follow you on Twitter. It is at CollinsworthPFF. Everyone should check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast. And it won't be long before another big season gets underway, and over 20 million people will be listening to you and Mike every Sunday night on NBC. Chris, thanks for coming out. This was awesome.
All right. It was a pleasure. And I'll call you later about our breaking news at PFF.
Sounds good. Can't wait.